This week on Vaticano, explore Pope Francis's role as a global diplomat, meet Cardinal Claudio Guggerotti, and discover the Vatican's efforts to protect and promote Eastern Catholic churches. Learn about the Jubilee's history and Rome's five holy doors celebrating this special event. Vaticano starts now. On the morning of December the 31st, Cardinal Kurt Koch celebrated a pontifical mass at Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI's tomb, marking the second anniversary of the Pope's passing. The Bavarian Pope, who died on December the 31st, 2022, rests just meters from St. Peter's tomb in the Vatican grottos. In his homily, Cardinal Koch reflected on Benedict's lifelong dedication to exploring the Word of God.
For a time, when people think of God as a stranger and are too deaf to listen to God, Benedict has reminded us that it is about time to think about God. For the faithful theologian and pontiff, there could be no greater priority than to show people an access to God, His truth and beauty. To put God in the center, this is the lasting legacy of Pope Benedict's theology.
Pope Benedict XVI served from 2005 to 2013, culminating in the first papal resignation in nearly six centuries. Even before his election, he profoundly influenced the global church as a young theologian at the Second Vatican Council and later as prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. The Mass concluded with prayers at Benedict XVI's tomb, where Cardinal Koch paused for a moment of silent reflection.
The opening of the holy door marks the salvific passage opened by Christ through his incarnation, death, and resurrection, calling all members of the Church to be reconciled with God and with one another.
At the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls in Rome, Cardinal James Harvey opened the fifth and final holy door for the Catholic Church's 2025 Jubilee of Hope. The ceremony began in the Basilica's column-lined courtyard with the ancient sound of a shofar, a ram's horn traditionally used by the Israelites to announce Jubilee years, as recorded in the Bible.
Apritemi le porte della giustizia.
Harvey prayed that Christians embrace the Jubilee year with the faith of the Apostle Paul. After opening the heavy bronze doors and entering the church, the congregation sang the Jubilee hymn, Pilgrims of Hope.
By crossing the threshold of this basilica with faith, we enter the time of mercy and forgiveness so that according to the right expression of our holy patron St. Paul, the way of hope that does not disappoint may be open to every woman and every man.
The Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls, one of Rome's four papal basilicas, is built over St. Paul's tomb. During the Jubilee, it serves as one of five holy door locations designated by the Pope, remaining open until December the 28th, 2025. The other holy doors for the 2025 Jubilee are located in St. Peter's Basilica, the Archbasilica of St. John Lateran, the Basilica of St. Mary Major, and for the first time in Jubilee history, inside Rome's Rebibbia prison. Pilgrims visiting Rome during the Jubilee can receive a plenary indulgence by passing through these doors.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. Pope Francis has appointed a woman to lead the Dicastery of the Roman Curia for the very first time. Sister Simona Brambilla, 59 years old, is a member and former Superior General of the Consolata Missionary Sisters. She has served as a secretary of the Vatican's Department for Religious and Consecrated Life since October 2023. She will now co-lead this dicastery together with Cardinal Angel Fernandez Artime, who has been named pro-prefect. On Epiphany, Pope Francis said the star the Magi followed to find the Christ child symbolizes God's universal love, not the power or fame of those who see themselves as stars. In his homily at St. Peter's Basilica on January the 6th, he explained that the Magi were guided by a different kind of light, symbolized by the star which illuminates and warms others by burning brightly and being consumed. A new church at Jesus' baptism site. On January the 10th, Secretary of State Cardinal Parolin and Latin Patriarch Cardinal Bizzaballa inaugurated the church on the eastern bank of the River Jordan. During the consecration, Cardinal Parolin encouraged Jordanian Christians to imitate Christ and bear witness. He was sent there by Pope Francis to preside over the consecration. The Holy Father had expressed his closeness to the faithful and all other participants of the ceremony in an open letter. Pope Francis warned that bullying in school prepares students for war instead of peace. Speaking to around 2,000 Italian teachers, educators, and parents, he strongly condemned bullying and led participants in pledging no bullying. The event on January the 4th celebrated the 80th anniversary of the Italian Association of Catholic Teachers and the 50th anniversary of the Association of Catholic School Parents. 2 weeks after its Christmas Eve reopening, St. Peter's Basilica's Holy Door has welcomed already over 500,000 visitors. The Holy See and Italian authorities are collaborating to accommodate an estimated 30 million people visiting Rome during the Jubilee year as pilgrims. The first major event of the 2025 Holy Year, the Jubilee of the World of Communicators, will take place from January the 24th to the 26th, attracting thousands of journalists and media professionals from around the world to come to Rome. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. Andreas Tonhauser for EWTN Vaticano.
Stay tuned. Up next on Vaticano, learn about Pope Francis's role as a global diplomat.
Every war leaves the world worse off than it found it. War is a failure of politics and humanity, a shameful surrender, a defeat in the face of the forces of evil.
Can a pope stop a war? During World War II, Joseph Stalin, the dictator of the Soviet Union, ridiculed the Vatican's diplomatic efforts by mockingly asking, "How many divisions does the Pope have?" Several decades later, the Soviet Empire had collapsed, but the Pope's diplomatic service remains active today.
Well, the popes have been calling for peace on an international platform since at least the beginning of the 20th century. Pope Benedict XV tried and failed to bring a negotiated end to the First World War. A half a century later, Pope St. Paul VI went to the United Nations and famously called for no more war. And his successors have followed suit.
Pope Francis's diplomacy extends beyond his weekly calls for peace from St. Peter's Square during general audiences.
Dobbiamo fare tutti gli sforzi per trattare, per negoziare.
In 2024, the pontiff attended the G7 summit in Italy, where he advocated for a new ethical code to address the challenges posed by artificial intelligence.
Pope Francis's signature contribution has been to link military conflict to social justice questions and particularly the environment. He wrote Laudato Si, his encyclical, in 2015, and he talked about how environmental degradation hits the poor particularly, and he linked it to conflict. Just the other day, he was talking to some Italian teachers, and he told them to discourage bullying by their students because that, he said, was a preparation for war, not for peace.
Of course, the Pope's speech to the diplomatic corps is not the only avenue that he has to speak to the important diplomatic issues of our day. The Pope also uses his weekly general audiences and Angelus addresses to speak to the issues of the day, and often uses these public speeches to make an impassioned plea for peace.
The Vatican is also working in the background, not only by sending humanitarian aid, but also as a mediator between the warring parties.
Oggi la diplomazia è molto, molto svalutata.
Today, diplomacy is very, very devalued. Today is the time of arms. There is no talk of dialogue. There is just confrontation. The Pope and the Holy See know that, and the fact that the Pope Francis sent Cardinal Zuppi to Kiev, to Moscow, to Washington, to Beijing, to talk about peace and humanitarian issues, shows just a sign of his own.
The Holy See is one of the great advantages, perhaps its great advantage as a diplomatic actor, is that it is neutral. It's sovereign but non-aligned, and that allows it to communicate with different sides in a conflict. In 2014, Pope Francis was very instrumental in facilitating a rapprochement between the U.S. and Cuba.
The Holy See has an enormous diplomatic network and relations with more than 180 sovereign states. But sometimes, even the Pope's diplomacy reaches its limits.
The Vatican was also facing a decades-long dispute with Beijing over the appointment of bishops. In 2018, the Holy See signed a provisional agreement with the Chinese government on the appointment of bishops. And right from the start, this was not a smooth process. Almost immediately after this agreement was signed, there were reports of increased persecution of the underground Catholic community in China. And in 2022, the Vatican revealed that Beijing had violated the terms of its agreement with the Holy See.
Pope Francis' diplomatic style is an extension of his leadership style, and so we might call it approachable, spontaneous, informal, very personal. He can be very blunt, as when he talks about, investigating Israel for terrorism in Gaza. But he can also be, capable of being silent when he thinks it's necessary. For example, he's refrained from criticizing China for human rights violations, presumably because he wants to pursue this rapprochement with China.
But to this day, the Pope is the preeminent religious figure in the world, and he still has global moral authority.
But Papa non smetterà fino all'ultimo.
The Pope will not stop until his last breath. He will keep talking about peace. The risk is that we get used to war. And in this sense, it seems to me that Pope's voice on peace is a bit like the rooster crowing and awakening Peter. The humanity has become like Peter, become a slave to violence, accustomed to violence.
Abituata alla violenza.
Penso a quanto sia urgente.
But Pope Francis is convinced that even the best diplomacy alone will not save the world. It needs more, namely, the help of God.
Chiediamo allora al Signore.
Let us ask the Lord that the leaders of nations and the parties in conflict may find the way to peace and unity. May we all recognize each other as brothers and sisters.
Eastern Catholic churches, renowned for their rich traditions and unique liturgical practices, are integral to the global Catholic communion. In a recent exclusive interview, Andreas Thonhauser, EWTN's Vatican bureau chief, engaged with Cardinal Claudio Guggerotti, the prefect of the Dicastery for the Eastern Churches, who provided an overview of the challenges and values of Christians in the Middle East.
There's a lot of change happening, and has happened over the last years in the Middle East, especially also in the Holy Land, as we sadly know, even the latest developments in countries like Syria. What do Christians need there?
They need everything, and we cannot give anything. Because as long as this war goes on, also volunteers, they cannot go there. Who is entering when the bombs are falling during the whole day and you don't know where? You see, all these foreign powers are so strictly mingled with the internal life that it is extremely difficult to have the perception of a possible common behavior.
It seems very clear that Pope Francis is also very interested in the situation there, in his constant calls for peace.
Oh yes, my dear, because there is no alternative. What is very clear is that the alternative is between a peace, maybe not a perfect peace, maybe not a just peace 100%, or having our boys in the army in 1 year, or even less.
You mean also for Europe? This is not something
absolutely.
To just look away.
Absolutely. Look what's happening in Eastern Europe, I mean within the Union. You know, what we considered a union to be taken for granted because we had money in common is not to be taken for granted because money is not the only problem.
What is the lesson here?
My impression is that we are too superficial. Because we have had good years of prosperity, of financial, more or less, good situation. But this is not all. The rest of the world is not. And who said that we live on an island preserved and we can drink scotch while there are crocodiles around?
What other things can we learn from the Eastern churches on a global level?
Great fidelity to prayer and to a good Christian life. The people of God is wonderful. Wherever they go, they are a model, an example for everybody. Christianity is something that was not obnoxious to society to create more violence. Of course, we had our internal violence with the Inquisition and other things, but generally, it's not bad for a society because we take care as Christians. But we take care also of those who are not Christians, which is very specific, very peculiar.
The Jubilee.
Yes.
What does it mean and how will it influence and impact the Eastern churches?
For the Orientals, it will be a very good occasion to perceive that somewhere else they have a different system. They have different traditions, and see if this thing is so alien to their own tradition, or it cannot be incorporated into their own tradition.
So there's a lot the West can learn from the East, but also vice versa.
Yes, as long as the West does not want to impose something on the East, because that is destroying the whole atmosphere of communion.
Thank you very much.
Great pleasure.
We'll be back after a short break with a special look at the holy doors of the Jubilee. In a world filled with darkness, anxiety, and the clash of weapons, the holy year 2025 arrives like a ray of sunshine. It heals wounds, soothes hearts, and instills hope. This is the Jubilee of Hope that Pope Francis envisions in his bull of indiction, Spes non confundit, hope does not disappoint.
Jubilee serves to tell the truth to the man and woman of our time. That the Lord can reach them where they are, but He will never leave them where they are. The one who comes is Christ, our hope.
He urges us to do so by passing through the holy door, the Jubilee's most powerful symbol. A few days ago, on Christmas night, December the 24th, Pope Francis opened the holy door of St. Peter's Basilica, inaugurating the Jubilee and inviting all of humanity to follow him on a new path of conversion and spiritual resurrection. Besides St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican, three other holy doors at Rome's major basilicas, St. Mary Major, St. John Lateran, and St. Paul Outside the Walls, are opened each Jubilee year. This time, Pope Francis introduced a uniquely special fifth holy door, opened personally by him on December the 26th inside a Roman prison, making it the only holy door he has opened himself besides that of St. Peter's Basilica.
Il Dio della speranza che si riempie di ogni gioia e pace nella fede e dalla potenza dello Spirito Santo sia con tutti voi.
Aprire una porta santa.
Opening a holy door here in Rabibbia means opening a holy door in all the prisons of the world. Let us remember that this is not just for Italy. The Jubilee is on an international level, and so this celebration, this opening, becomes an effort to open a door and bring hope to millions of inmates.
From the start of his pontificate, Pope Francis has championed the weak and marginalized. The Jubilee of Hope perfectly embodies this mission. His visit to Rabibbia serves as a powerful symbol of closeness and hope for those who are struggling.
When our prisoners found out that Pope Francis was coming to visit us for the opening of the Holy Door, they immediately became active with a disarming spontaneity in thinking of creating, of building a gift using the woods from the migrants' barges.
We have a workshop here called Metamorphosis, which transforms the woods from the barges that transported the migrants into many objects. They couldn't wait to give Pope Francis their special gift.
Now the bronze door hidden behind the high prison walls stands as a powerful symbol of hope for those enduring life behind bars. On Sunday, December the 29th, the world witnessed the spectacular opening of the holy door of another of Rome's major basilicas, St. John Lateran. St. John Lateran Basilica, also known as the Archbasilica of St. John Lateran, is the cathedral of Rome and the most important of the four major Roman basilicas. Revered as Mater Ecclesia, the mother of the church for Roman Catholics, it was likely the first basilica in Rome to open its holy door, commemorating the Jubilee year of 1425.
According to the archives, the very first holy door to be opened in Rome was probably St. John Lateran in the year 1425, followed by that of St. Peter's Basilica.
On January the 1st, the Papal Basilica of St. Mary Major, Pope Francis's beloved church in the heart of Rome, opened its holy door to pilgrims during the Solemnity of Mary, the Most Holy Mother of God. The world awaited the opening of the final holy door of this Jubilee at the Papal Basilica of St. Paul Outside the Walls on Sunday, January the 5th. Rome expects over 35 million pilgrims during the holy year. Visitors must register online and download a special QR code to access the holy door.
We have the official site of the Jubilee, and then the official app from iOS and Android that is downloadable. You can download the official app for the Jubilee that can give you the opportunity to register to cross the holy door. We will have many pilgrims from all over the world coming in Rome for the Jubilee year, for the holy year. And so everyone, maybe they can feel a bit confused for the for the enormous amount of people that are here in Rome. So the only info point, official info point, is here in Via della Conciliazione and the number 7. And then many volunteers can help them to have facilities to cross the Holy Door with no problems and completely safe.
Apart from those who will come to Rome during the year 2025, many, many millions will follow this year's Jubilee events online.
Certainly, technology comes to us. The mass media transmit images in real time to the farthest corners of the globe. But the spirit remains the same. Passing through the Holy Door is an inner journey and an inner renewal. The spirit that animated the first Jubilee in 1300, even though it has been over 700 years now since that moment, remains the same. Everything changes, but on the other hand, nothing changes. We have to be ready to undertake a new path, and the Church gives us this opportunity.